This is 89.9 WWNO. I'm Janae Pierre, and it's time for All Things New Orleans, or All Things Cuba NOLA? On today's show, we'll talk about the cultural connections between Cuba and New Orleans and highlight one of Santiago's most renowned congas. Then, Jessica Rosegard checks in with Cityscapes columnist Richard Campanella. That's all coming up on All Things New Orleans. Stay with us. This year, the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival, presented by Shell, honors the city's deep historical connection with Cuba. From music to food, you'd be surprised at the similarities between New Orleans and Cuban cities like Santiago. Here to talk more about the correlation of Cuba and New Orleans is Ariana Hall, co-founder and executive director at the Cuba NOLA Arts Collective, and Lazaro Bendares, co-director and member of Conga de las Ollas. Ariana, Lazaro, welcome.
Hi, Janae. So nice to be here.
First off, let's talk about your role with Cuba NOLA Arts Collective.
Well, I'm the co-founder and the executive director. We founded the Cuba NOLA Arts Collective in 1999. Dr. Felipe Smith, Lourdes Mega, and I, because we felt that there were enough historical connections and cultural parallels between Cuba and New Orleans to really sink our teeth into and do a lot of work. And here we are over 17 years later. We do cultural exchanges between Cuban and New Orleans artists and tradition bearers. We bring artists from Cuba here to New Orleans to do artist residencies. We bring artists from New Orleans to Cuba. We've worked extensively with La Conga de los Hoyos in Santiago de Cuba. We've worked with about, I'd say, at least 70% of the artists that Jazz Fest is presenting this year for Cuba Comes to Jazz Fest. So this is quite exciting for us because we get to work with people that we've already brought to New Orleans, and we get to work with people that we've worked with a lot in Cuba.
Now, you briefly mentioned the cultural similarities. Let's go ahead and point out a few.
Well, we do a lot of work around neighborhood traditions in particular, because the idea behind that is that the neighborhood traditions are what give a lot of the energy and impulse to a lot of the other traditions. So second lines, Mardi Gras Indians, congas in Cuba, rumba, a lot of other different Afro-Cuban traditions. So we can spend a lot of time just looking at similarities between second lines and congas. I had some friends here this weekend from Grupo Cauri, which is a folklore group in Santiago de Las Vegas. They do a lot of work around Abacua traditions, and we were spending some time around some of the Black Indians in the Jazz and Heritage area because there are a lot of similarities between the work that Grupo Cauri does around Abacua and the Black Indian traditions here in New Orleans. And so, you know, it's this richness and all of these layers that we're looking at with that, and sort of how music in both places is constantly updating and recreating itself, and how traditions are very alive. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not something of the past. They're something that are very pertinent to people's everyday lives in both places.
Right. Lazaro, you're in New Orleans performing for Jazz Fest. Since you've been here, have you picked up any cultural connections?
Bueno, sí, es casi lo mismo. Estar aquí en Santiago es casi lo mismo.
Being here and being in Santiago de Cuba is almost the same thing.
Really?
Sí.
Again, Lazaro, you are the co-director of Conga de los Ollas. How long have you been involved with the group?
Bueno, desde el año 1996 soy músico. Pero anteriormente, desde el año 89, 88, era un niño prácticamente.
So since 1996, I've been a musician, but since much earlier than that, like in 88, 89, I was already participating as a child with La Conga de los Hoyos.
And were you participating because it was part of those neighborhood traditions that Ariana mentioned earlier?
No, Y entonces ya mi papá venía en la conga desde muy pequeño.
And my father grew up in the conga since he was a child.
Y ya cuando yo nací, que ya tenía como 5 años, 6 años, ya empecé a conocer lo que era la conga de Los Hoyos.
And so since I was like 5 or 6 years old, I was always around everything that had to do with la conga de Los Hoyos.
Entonces mis primeros años fueron como comparsero, es decir, salidor de la comparsa. Yo, mi hermano y mi hermana, porque somos 3 hermanos.
So I have a brother and a sister. We're 3 all together. And so we would always be going out, you know, with the dancers in the conga.
Y de ahí ya en el año 96 es que empiezo en la conga como músico y ahora tengo 21 años en la conga.
And so I've officially been a musician in the conga since 1996.
Wow, that's amazing. And your father is the director of Conga de los Hoyos.
Sí, mi papá es el director de la Conga de los Hoyos. Anteriormente era el segundo director.
So my father is currently the first director of the Conga, and before that he was actually the second, like the vice director.
Okay. Lozada, what is Conga de los Hoyos?
Bueno, la Conga de los Hoyos, para nosotros los cubanos y los santiagueros, bueno, significa mucho porque es algo que nos identifica dentro de la gama.
So for Cubans, La Conga de los Hoyos is actually something that is a sort of a term of national heritage. People in Cuba, across Cuba, especially Santiago, but all across Cuba are very proud of La Conga de los Hoyos. We are a symbol of Cuban culture.
Entonces ya cuando se habla de Cuba, se habla de Conga de los Hoyos, de rumba, ron, tabaco.
So among different things that Cubans are very proud of when you talk about Cuban culture, La Conga de los Hoyos is one
también
of those. You can be talking about rumba, you can be talking about cigars and rum, but La Conga de los Hoyos is one of those essential elements of Cuban culture.
Bigger than rum?
Sí,
it's
sí,
up
sí.
There, they're on the same level, according to Lázaro at least.
Entonces, pues nada, que aunque La Conga de los Hoyos está situada en Santiago de Cuba.
Even though we're in Santiago de Cuba.
Exacto, todo cubano que está fuera de Cuba se identifica con ella al escucharla donde quiera que esté.
When Cubans hear the sound of the conga with that, you know, shrill Chinese cornet sound and the heavy percussion, they immediately identify the sound and identify it as a symbol of Cuban culture.
Además, esta conga fue fundada en 1902, ya cumplen este año 115 años.
The conga was founded in 1902 and this year we'll celebrate our 115th anniversary.
Yo vengo siendo ya la quinta, sexta generación que pasa por la Conga de los Hoyos. Por ahí, quinta o sexta, una de
so
las dos.
So, I'm probably like in the fifth or sixth generation of the directors of La Conga de los Hoyos.
Exacto, porque no quiero hablar mucho de atrás, porque sí viene de mucho más atrás, pero bueno, quiero mejor tocar ese tema.
But of course, it comes from even further back than that. I don't want to try to go into all of that historical ambiguity, but we know that this tradition goes back much further than just 1902.
That's awesome. Now, I'd like to talk more about the similarities between New Orleans second lines and congas in Santiago. I had the pleasure of participating in the conga that actually started at the Jazz Fest on last weekend, and I noticed a lot of similarities, in particular, a call and response. Can we talk about that?
Definitely. I think that, you know, first we can take a little step back and just look at what is a second line, because we kind of take that for granted. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there are 2 basic types of second lines. There are funeral second lines and there are anniversary second lines. So the anniversaries for the Social Aid and Pleasure Clubs. So the Social Aid and Pleasure Clubs have their parades, their particular Sunday throughout the year. So one thing that's actually different is that we have second lines almost weekly here in New Orleans from the end of August all the way through the middle of June. In Santiago, they only have congas a few times a year.
Okay.
The conga parades or processions are massive. You know, second lines are big, and, you know, we have some that are maybe more massive. But I think the thing that you have to really understand about a second line so that then you can understand what makes it similar to a conga is that, as Dr. Helen Regis says in some of her writing, if you just have a band going down the street and whatever the mainline group is, whether it's the family or whether it's the Social Aid and Pleasure Club, that doesn't really make a second line. That's the main line. What makes the second line is everybody else joining in.
Yes.
So unless, you know, to really rock the parade, you have to have everybody joining in. And so that's the idea with the conga, is that everybody joins in. When we brought the Rebirth Brass Band to Santiago de Cuba in 2002, as soon as Rebirth started going down the street in the Los Hoyos neighborhood with La Conga de Los Hoyos, people in Santiago know how to just join in to the parade.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of folks knowing what to do, you guys had a similar experience today. Let's talk briefly about that.
Today, we did a school workshop at Warren Easton, and when the conga really got going, what I was impressed by is that some of the students at Warren Easton started dancing, and the way you dance to a conga parade is quite different from how you dance to a second line.
Yeah, I noticed.
But intuitively, the students just started doing it almost exactly the right way. And when we brought Rebirth to Santiago, the same thing happened, where people in Santiago were dancing second line as if they were from New Orleans. Mm-hmm. It was very strange.
But it seems like, you know, whether you're at a second line or you're in Cuba at a conga, you know, the music is in your soul.
It's the music. It's also this feeling of, you know, moving down the street with scores or hundreds or thousands of other people and moving all together.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a second liner or if you're a conguero, you definitely love that feeling of just being in unity with everybody else and moving all together with the music. So you feel the music, but I think that one of the other main things is that you feel that kind of community sense of just, you know, this mass movement of people mm-hmm. going down the street. And I think that's the other similarity is that these are moving through neighborhoods, these processions. So you're also moving all together through neighborhoods, and there's kind of a sense of a group dynamic or power of being able to move through the streets all together,
mm-hmm.
that it kind of
as
it transcends, yeah, as one, and that it transcends normal everyday life, that it's a euphoria, mm-hmm. a group euphoria.
Okay. So as far as similarities, New Orleans second lines and congas, they both share a band in the middle of the street going through neighborhoods. However, with the New Orleans second line, they usually highlight some type of social aid and pleasure group. When it comes down to a conga, that doesn't happen, that part, right?
Well, the conga band is the function of the band and sort of our social aid and pleasure club, because there are different congas in different neighborhoods in Santiago.
Okay.
So it is a difference because they're not distinct, but there's still the sense of different neighborhoods. So La Conga de los Hoyos has a tradition where they do once a year what's called the invasion. Before the invasion, there are visits. So different congas go and visit different neighborhoods. The invasion is where La Conga de los Hoyos goes and invades every neighborhood in Santiago. It's a massive, massive parade that takes hours, you know, like you're talking about 8 to 10 hours.
Wow.
It's quite exhausting. Yeah, so
yeah.
It's different in that sense.
Lozaro, do you have anything to add?
Eso es así. Como tú decías, que si la gente no se une a la conga para disfrutarlo de la conga, no sucede. Tiene que suceder así.
Lázaro is in agreement that unless a lot of people come and participate and incorporate themselves into the procession that's passing by, it's not a good conga.
Yeah.
Exacto. Y la disputa de barrio, eso siempre existe. Al final se llevan bien, pero cada cual siente por su conga. De mi parte, en Cuba, en Santiago.
So there are always these disputes between neighborhoods. Everybody wants to represent their conga band from their neighborhood. In his opinion.
Exacto. Cuando ahora mismo no estamos tiempo de carnaval, pero cuando se acerca el tiempo de carnaval, ya los músicos empiezan a como a tratarse diferente, la gente de barrio empiezan a tratarse diferente.
So we're not in carnival time right now, and let me just note that carnival in Santiago is not a pre-Lenten carnival the way that it is here. It's actually in July, so it's called carnival just so that people understand that it's, you know, a lot of street level festivities. Mm-hmm. But it's in July for several different historical reasons. But he's saying that as they get closer to carnival time in Santiago, musicians from different congas will start treating each other differently. You know, tensions will rise.
Yeah, really.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Exacto. Y ya que lo que hacen la gente de los barrios, que ya cuando llega junio.
So what people in the neighborhoods do when June arrives.
Que se celebra ya 24 días de San Juan.
So on St. John's Day, which is the 24th of June.
29 días de San Pedro.
And the 29th of June, which is St. Peter's feast day.
Cada conga sale en su territorio ahí mismo.
Every conga in every neighborhood goes out in their neighborhood. Those are the visits that I was talking about before.
Entonces, cuando entra primero de julio.
And when July 1st comes around.
Cada conga tiene que visitar a otras congas. Cada barrio.
That's when the visits start. So they actually all start visiting each other in the different neighborhoods, and they carry out this ritual sequence of visits to the other neighborhoods.
Menos la conga de Los Hoyos, que es la última que hace recorrido en todos los barrios, porque es la más tradicional, la más famosa. Y
and so all of the congas except la conga de Los Hoyos, because la conga de Los Hoyos does the last parade, and they'll go and visit every neighborhood because La Conga de Los Hoyos is considered to be the oldest conga, the most traditional.
Lazaro, Ariana, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
Gracias.
You too can participate in the Cuban experience inside the Cultural Exchange Pavilion this weekend at the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival presented by Shell. Each month, we talk to Richard Campanella about his cityscapes column for NOLA.com, The Times-Picayune. His most recent column is about street pavement and how New Orleans did or didn't do it over the centuries. Here's WWNO's Jessica Rosegard.
I'm here with Richard Campanella, a professor of geography at Tulane University, to talk about his latest column on NOLA.com. Richard, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you.
Your column talks about basically roads and how different layers of paving throughout history and you know that you can read the layers of the roads, maybe kind of like rings on a tree?
Or geological strata. You know, when you hike through the Grand Canyon, you go down layer by layer and you go back in time. And very much with our streets here, particularly in the French Quarter, you could see each of the layers in most cases where you'll see the recent asphalt. Below that, a layer of concrete. Below that, granite paving stones from the 19th century. And then there's this kind of mysterious layer with orange brick shards and shells and sometimes a rogue timber. And then with colonial era. Then below that, this dense, fine alluvium from the Mississippi's deposit. So you're right there, you're looking at the full geological and human history of the city. And the fact that Bourbon Street in particular is about to be torn up this summer affords an opportunity to see that.
What is that geological strata, what does that tell us about sort of even technology and how we've evolved in that sense?
Well, it speaks to the ongoing attempt of humans to try to bring hardened, rigid urban order to a fluvial delta that likes none of that. This entire environment is a product of an uncontrolled river lunging in different directions, depositing sediment, pushing back fresh water, humans want the opposite under their feet. And so from the earliest colonial times, there have been both municipal as well as individualized attempts to try to make peace with this. And so the street grid is laid out not with the founding of the city. It's actually 4 years later after a hurricane damaged the existing haphazard housing stock and finally allowed Adrien Desposes and Leblanc de la Tour to lay out this grid that they had been envisioning all along.
The French Quarter.
Then that is the French Quarter. And so by the end of the 1720s, the streets are laid out, but they are entirely dusty and muddy when wet. Ditches are excavated, and they actually use the term aisle to refer to the blocks because they're surrounded by all this mud.
Tell me about the mud. It was a problem on many levels, right?
Well, certainly for any sort of drayage, the hoofbeats of mules and horses, the wheels, and people. And so the various attempts to get above the mud initially evolved wood. There was plenty of wood around. Flatboats were coming down the river. They couldn't go the upriver, so they'd be disassembled. And that scrap timber would use to plank the tread of the street. Meanwhile, for where people actually walked, little benches were built up, and these were called trottoirs or walkways, but a nickname emerged because they looked like little benches, and to this day, one sometimes hears the terms banquet. And so by the time of the Spanish, you would have seen these raised wooden walkways, plank streets, but then you had ditches going perpendicular to the river in the attempt to guide rainfall runoff backwards to the back swamp. So this meant that the planked roads had to jump over these ditches. And so you would have had these little wooden bridges everywhere. So just negotiating the streets of the French Quarter would have been a real ankle-twisting endeavor.
Talk to me about why we pave streets today with asphalt when we used different materials back 200 years ago.
Well, the main change happened over the course of the turn of the 20th century. And the broader driver is the progressive movement that's going on nationwide, where citizens are increasingly asking and pressing their leaders for municipal improvements, and paving streets is one of them. This also coincides with the time when the streetcar grid is being massively expanded. So rails are being laid down, and that was an opportunity to finally kind of get the pavement right. And then finally, of course, the advent of the automobile in the early 1900s, driving on, remember these were solid tires on granite stones, would have been a bone-rattling experience. There's new subdivisions being laid out in drained lakefront neighborhoods. They are auto-friendly. They're using paving streets. So that by the opening decades of the 20th century, asphalt is laid down right over, in many cases in the French Quarter, right over the bricks, right over the paving stones. And all of this is after the underground utilities had been laid. So when you see one of these utility cuts in the quarter, you see each one of these layers stepping back in time.
So how were these various road projects paid for?
There were attempts in Spanish and early American times to hold the frontage owners, in other words, the parcel owners responsible for paying for the street improvements. There's also evidence of taxation by frontage. If you owned 60 feet, you paid a certain amount, and that went into the pavement in front of you. Eventually, this becomes something that's handled at the municipal level through the Department of Public Works today, oftentimes with federal grants.
And because it is so relevant to headlines in the news today with the repaving of Bourbon Street, citizens in town questioning the reasoning, the expense, the planning, the time it's going to take, all of the headlines that we're seeing on NOLA.com today, we would have seen 100 and 200 years ago at just slightly different circumstances.
I could point you to quotes that, but with the swapping out of a couple of proper nouns, could be ripped from today's headlines. I cite one in the article of one unfortunate fellow from Kentucky who stepped out of his carriage on Canal Street and, quote, was unfortunately drowned, unquote. I suspect inebriation played as much a role as the deep puddle that he drowned in, but that went unsaid.
And inebriation in the French Quarter hasn't changed today either. Richard, thank you so much for your time today.
You're welcome, and thank you.
Richard Campanella is a professor of geography at the Tulane School of Architecture. His Cityscapes column can be found every month on NOLA.com. And that's it for this week's edition of All Things New Orleans. I'm Janae Pierre. Follow me on Twitter at Miss Janae Pierre and feel free to tweet comments or questions. Would you like to suggest a guest or topic? Send an email to Janae at WWNO.org. That's J-A-N-A-E at WWNO.org. Visit WWNO.org to check out previous shows and be sure to catch us next week
right here on 89.9 WWNO New Orleans and 90.5 KTLN Thibodaux Houma. Thanks for joining us.